Let me bring in our hypnotist, Marshall Silver.
It's Marshall Silver, ladies and gentlemen, the world's fastest hypnotist.
Live means live, baby. That's what it means. It means anything can happen. And that's just the case, isn't it? Had a long discussion this morning with my son, Sterling Silver. I don't know about any other parents. Parenting is bittersweet. And the sweet part, of course, is being a parent. The bitter part is watching your children grow to the point where they don't need you. And obviously, that's what every parent should want anyway, is to be a good enough parent that their children are well-trained and well-educated and well-reared to not need them anymore. But my son's turning 13 this year, and my next son is 11. My daughter's 9, and it's bittersweet. And we had a long conversation, his first trip likely to go away from the family and go to camp is tough. It's not easy. And one of the things that I seek to do, and it's a good adage to live by, is to be the same in the dark as I am in the light, meaning that I'm a real person to you and that what you see is what you get. And the same thing obviously is true across the board, that I want my children to know me. And so I had a very long conversation with my son about the reasons that I was concerned, what I was concerned about and everything else. And I just want to tell you that his response, who he is as a human being, far exceeds my expectation as far as just being a good person and being conscious and being aware and paying attention to everything, especially me, that he knows me well. And so I tip my hat to everybody that is a parent. And if you're a good person as a mom or a dad, it's a parent. Bad joke. And I just want you to know that this day is all about making sure that we find as much goodness and as much quality and as much intercommunication as we can with each other to make it an awesome day. Before we get started with today's guest, and I'm really excited about today's guest, he has a boatload of information to give to you. He clearly is doing it right. He's got over a million followers on Instagram alone, so doing some things really good. For those of you that have been paying attention to the show, you know we're live. And today I am going in to have stem cell surgery done on my knees. And I'm excited about it. I have not been able to play racquetball since last July when I tore both of my meniscuses, playing with my extremely athletic and very young, active wife. I'm excited about it because I really look forward to not having this kind of pain anymore. And I'm also concerned because they've said that the pain I'll feel may be some of the worst pain I have ever felt in my life. And I've given birth to great ideas, so I'm a little concerned about it. At any rate, that's what's happening today. We'll let you know whether or not we are going to be able to do the show tomorrow and Friday. I'm counting on it, even if I'm in pain. In fact, we're even going to see if we can take the cameras inside of the surgery room and get you to not necessarily see the surgery, that might be too bloody, but to see the look on my face and the experience and how everything goes. So at any rate, we're getting everything going here. We're excited to be with you, and I know that you're going to love today's show. On today's show, I've got a very special guest. He is somebody that has changed lots and lots and lots of lives. He is somebody that you're going to love, going to add massive value to you. His name is Edward Collins. He's a seasoned leader and innovator in the field of organizational management. Edward has dedicated his career to empowering teams and transforming businesses through effective leadership and strategic foresight. With decades of experience, he's helped numerous organizations achieve remarkable growth and sustain success by fostering cultures of engagement, innovation, and resilience. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, an experienced executive, or you're simply interested in the nuances of leadership and organizational dynamics, Edward's insights are bound to enlighten and inspire you. He'll cover critical topics such as transformative leadership practices, strategies for employee engagement, and methods for building adaptive, high-performing teams. With a nice, big Marshall Silver welcome, please welcome Edward Collins to the show. Welcome home.
Hello, Marshall. How are you?
I'm always awesome, man. Glad to have you with me. You are in Miami right now?
Physically, I am. Yes.
And mentally, I'm here too. Yeah, good stuff. I am. I'm on the West Coast, so I guess we've got the entire country covered.
Coast to coast.
For those that don't know anything about you, how about a little background before we dive in? And I'm excited because you're brilliant. I've watched your stuff on Instagram, and I just love it. You cut to the chase. You tell it like it is. You're fun. You're easy to understand, easy to chat with. So tell everybody else about you.
Awesome. Well, I'm a lawyer. I specialize in tax, estate, and business law. For the past 26 years, I've been building and scaling my own companies, taking each one of them up to and through 6, 7, and even 8 figures each. Plus a real estate portfolio, residential, commercial real estate. And I say all this not to be braggadocious, just to demonstrate that I'm academically trained in the language of business and money. And I also have practical experience taking that knowledge and applying it to real world, right? Like my own life, helping other business owners do the exact same thing.
Most people dislike attorneys.
Yes. Yes, they do. It happens.
It's true. The joke is, what do you call a bus full of attorneys going off a cliff with an empty seat?
A crying shame.
I'll tell you, I have an attorney that I've used for decades to attorney my attorneys. And yes. It was the smartest thing I ever did. Just finding somebody that I could trust first and foremost as a person, and then have him watch over the process, because it's a completely different mindset to be an attorney.
The past 26 years have definitely demonstrated that having perspective is something that's valuable for everyone, right? And if you don't personally possess perspective, at least diverse perspective, you should go out and find it, right? Because at the end of the day, you don't have to be the one who knows it all. You don't have to be the one who does it all. But what you do need to do is find the who to implement the how for you.
Very, very Henry Ford of you.
Every now and again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that that's the biggest thing for people to recognize is what we are good at and what we are not good at, and surround ourselves with people that are good at the things we are not good at, nor even want to make them fun. You know, my attorney, his name's John Mayer, and he's down here in San Diego. And my attorney and I have the kind of a relationship that he's wise enough to tell me which battles to pick. And I think sometimes attorneys either are afraid of their clients, or they don't want to necessarily do that, or maybe they want to bill extra hours. I don't know. But the bottom line for me is having somebody that can say, Marshall, you're probably going to lose this. I mean, we'll go to battle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might win, but the likeliness is slim. So maybe you should just figure out a way to overcome this. Most of your stuff these days, it seems to me from researching you, is on the asset protection, on the financial side, on entity structure, and just the ways of putting things together. So can we talk a little bit about, you know, how things have changed recently? Obviously, all sorts of things are trickling down from this administration that have thrown a whole lot of wrenches and a whole lot of people's gears. And so, again, can you give maybe just a little bit of an insight as to the things that you're dealing with most right now?
Well, I know it may sound strange, but the thing that actually takes most of my time is just helping to elevate financial literacy. And there's such a dearth of it out there in the world. So many people just have they lack the foundational understanding about how money works, how money is a tool that can be utilized. It is neither good nor bad. It is simply a utility. And it's just not something that's taught in schools. So it is incumbent upon me to go out there and help people learn that language, right? The language of money. So if you really were to look at my typical week, the vast majority of my time is spent in financial literacy topics, helping business owners to learn what money is, how to actually leverage it within their own personal lives, how to leverage it within the business, and then ultimately to chart their particular path towards whatever their goals and objectives are, right? Leveraging those fundamental principles, the frameworks, if you will, that get you to the outcomes you desire. So if I look at what's going on in the landscape of the economy, most business owners these days are a bit concerned as to what's going to happen over the course of the coming few months, what's going to happen over the course of the coming few years. I mean, we live in an environment where, quite frankly, the value of the dollar has been eroded so much that there's significant concern about what life looks like in the decades ahead. But going into those decades with good principled knowledge can help you make sure that you navigate the best course as possible. And that's literally what I spend a lot of my time doing. And if you've seen any of my socials, you know that that's literally what I do online as well. I spend most of my time taking a look at what other financial gurus may be posting and then commenting on it, giving my insight, all aimed at helping to elevate that financial literacy that exists in the ecosystem.
I have my opinions. I'd love to hear yours. Sure. There's a lot of financial gurus out there, very visible. Most of them, in my opinion, are completely full of crap. Their advice is so bad that they should be held liable for giving that kind of advice. What's your, who's the worst and who's the best that you see out in the marketplace?
Well, I'm definitely not going to name names, but what I'll say is this. I think that if you're ever in a position where you're dealing with a financial professional and you're going to ask any type of question, never ask a can question of a financial professional, because the simplest response for them to give you is no, because it forecloses them from responsibility, right? If you're going to talk to your lawyer or your accountant or your even your financial advisor and you say, can I do X, Y, and Z? The simplest and easiest response that they'll give you is no, because again, they're not now going to be on the hook. However, if you simply add one word in front of that question, how, you change the entire dynamic of that conversation. How can I do X, Y, and Z? And if you are listening to financial quote unquote gurus online, really start to think about it in the context of the how can questions, right? If they're sharing something, you have to really start thinking critically. How can I do that within my environment? And then go back to your personal financial professionals that you trust within your own life and ask those types of questions. How can I apply X, Y, and Z and start to get to the meat of it? There is a lot of junk out there, though. I mean, if you look at the stuff that proliferates around social media, most of it is fear-mongering. Most of it is clips, 40 to 60-second clips of soundbite type of information without any backup. The classic example is at the end of every year for the past, I'd say, 3 to 4 years, I can't tell you the number of posts that you'll get from accountants or other financial quote unquote gurus talking about going out and buying things like a G-Wagon and deducting it under Section 179 of the Internal Revenue Code. If you ever hear that, you know that that person doesn't know what they're talking about, because if you're trying to accomplish a goal like reducing your tax burden, Section 179 doesn't apply to the G-Wagon. It's actually Section 168K of the Internal Revenue Code. But 179 is the thing that is the soundbite that so many of them have heard. So they just regurgitate the same information over and over and over again. And that's not even the best option, right? If you're looking to reduce your tax burden, I never want you to spend a dollar to get 30 cents of savings. So if you're going to put dollars out into the world, you want to make sure that they're actually working for you. So if you're going to try to maximize deductions, you're always looking for a return on those dollars put out, not just the tax savings. And it's those types of fundamental principles that a lot of people just lack, not because of their own fault, right? It's the reality of the world. We live in a society that, from an educational platform standpoint, it does not reward making you independent, right? It doesn't. It's not desirous of that outcome. So they create a system that is essentially making you beholden to what is the government, and what it potentially could or could not do for you. That's not freedom, right? So I was having a conversation with a group of business owners this past weekend. I went to an environment where we were interacting with some really high-class players. We were in a house, a private home, and in the home, the income, the cumulative income that's being generated is over $1 billion. So every individual in the home, cumulatively, we were generating over $1 billion of revenue. And we were talking about some very fundamental principles, like just concepts of understanding how to put your dollars to work in order to get outcomes that you desire. There are fundamental lies that you and I have been told pretty much all of our lives around money. Like for instance, Have you ever heard the phrase like save for a rainy day, right? You've heard that, right? It's a lie. Savings is stupid, right? If you put your money away and don't think about it, it's no longer your employee, right? If you don't put your money to work, it becomes the employee of someone else. And in that scenario, it becomes the employee of the bank. And the bank has this amazing system where they take your money and they lend it out 9 times because of this fractional reserve system that we exist within here in the United States and many of the other developed countries around the world. But if you understand how you can simply flip the switch and reorganize your money mindset to stop talking about things in terms of savings, but rather in terms of storage of capital, well, even though it sounds like just semantics, when you change your mindset to say, okay, I am no longer saving my money, I am storing it for a purpose, that totally shifts the dynamic of what you're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis, how you're actually going to be treating those resources so that you can go out into the world and actually create a life that you really want. Because we've been told another lie, right? The American dream is home ownership, right? That's a lie that you and I have been sold by the banking institutions. Because the reality is, if you look at home ownership as an example, the average individual who buys a home holds onto that home for about 8 years right now. That's what the average hold period is for a home. And more than 70% of new home acquisition happens through indebtedness, meaning you get a mortgage in order to acquire that home. Well, the banks love that scenario. Why? Because mortgages are what are called amortized loans, which means the way the payments are organized in the early parts of those loan years, the vast majority of the payments are interest payment, not principal. So that means over those course of the 8 years, very, very little principal pay down happens. Lots and lots of interest happen to the bank. And then you're going to sell the property. And what are you going to do? You're going to go buy a new property and start the whole game all over again. That's why the banks in New York City, they own really, really big buildings, right? Those aren't cheap because they're using your dollars to go out and do this. They've created this indoctrination process to help really motivate most Americans to believe that the true American dream is home ownership. That is not the American dream. The American dream is financial freedom, right? Having financial freedom, like that is the most important freedom to fight for. Like if you're going to fight for any freedom, fight for financial freedom because it leads to the freedom of mobility. It leads to the freedom of education, the freedom of healthcare, the freedom of security, the freedom of choice. Right? Financial freedom is the most important freedom, but the system doesn't even teach you what that means. It doesn't teach you how to achieve it. Like I have a real example, Marshall. This is a question, and be honest with me. At any point in time over the course of the past decade, have you used the Pythagorean theorem?
Oh God, I use that every day. Washing my back this morning with it.
Right. Now, I'm not saying it's not important to learn some of these things, but how much different would your life be if instead of that, they taught you how to file your taxes, right? Or they taught you how to manage your financial resources, or how to negotiate deals, or how to source assets to go out and buy, right? If they taught you real principles that lead to financial freedom, well, then they couldn't rely on you to continue to being one of the lamb that just overpays their taxes every year.
Well, and there's a whole lot of layers to that too. Not only is the concept of home ownership pounded into people, and you won't name names, I will. Susie Orman or even Dave Ramsey telling people, you can't afford that. You know, mm-hmm. Own your home free and clear. And my response to that is, that's insane. So you want me to own an asset free and clear that's going to fluctuate in value, number one. And number two, I'm going to keep pouring into that thing. Even after I own it free and clear, I'm still going to keep paying for insurance and taxes and carry costs, maintenance, everything on that property. Why? And then the second layer of that to force massive consumerism is expect my kids to move out when they're 18. Tell them exactly. They've got to go buy their own house, create their own set of bills, create their own debt load that they're not ever making any money on. And so you take people, and I'm not a fan of Grant Cardone's on every level. I'm certainly a fan on the level where he says it's gotten to the point where home ownership isn't necessarily a great thing anymore. Asset ownership is. If those assets are making you money, but not home ownership. By the way, you mentioned one other thing, and I wanted to get back to it. You were talking about financial advisors saying, go buy that G-Wagon at the end of the year. Do you have a G-Wagon?
I do not.
Good. So why would somebody buy that ugly ass thing to begin with? Number one. Exactly. But the second part of it is I understand the idea of pre-tax, post-tax money. That all makes sense.
Absolutely.
Buying an asset that doesn't make you more money to protect you from having to pay taxes, you're right. That's just dumb. So you went from a 30% liability to 100% liability, and you still can't use those assets to do anything. You're unless you're leveraging the G-Wagon.
I would actually challenge you, though. I would challenge you. And I think this is important for the audience to hear. The you're using the word asset, and I just fundamentally disagree with how you're using it. See, for me, the definition of an asset is something that you control, which generates cash flow for you. So if it's not generating cash flow, under my definition, it does not meet the test of being an asset. If it takes money from you, it is a liability, right? These are very, very simple definitions. And in fact, the AICPA would fundamentally disagree with my definition. But here's the question for you, Marshall. How many truly independently wealthy accountants do you know, right? If you don't, why are you taking their advice on how to define terms?
I remember the first year I wrote a seven-figure check to the IRS.
Oh yeah.
I went to my bookkeeper, who was making probably at the time $50,000 a year. And I said, oh my God, I owe seven figures to the IRS. How do I avoid ever stroking this check again? And I kid you not, my little angry bookkeeper making $50,000 a year said, don't earn so much money. And again, that's the challenge. Is you're absolutely right. We're seeking high-end financial advice from people who have never experienced high-end finance.
Yeah.
There's another guru, Robert Kiyosaki. And Kiyosaki talks about a concept that realistically makes sense to me. He says, invest in income-generating assets. That makes sense, except I'm guessing, and I don't know this because we haven't talked about it. My opinion on that is people that make money have a different opinion on what an income-generating asset is. My experience, my opinion of an income-generating asset is just that, something that makes you money. But you can make almost anything, including that god-awful, ugly G-Wagon. You can make that thing make you money and make it make sense. If you're buying it and you're wrapping it with ads, if you're buying it and your primary use is to cart prospects or clients or customers around, and then you get some free use time of that as well. And I'm glad you have a different opinion. I see your smug little cringe on your face when I'm saying all this, and I welcome it. But the whole point of that is I think that sometimes people get the idea that financial wellness means sacrifice to quality of life.
Oh, definitely not.
Just the opposite. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that financial resources are infinitely abundant. Right. So, again, one of the challenges that so many of us have learned through traditional schooling, or really where financial literacy gets taught, is around the kitchen table. But the problem with that is most of our parents are not truly financially literate. So what we learn there is also wrong. We've grown up believing in this concept called the economic pie. Right. And that is essentially that there is limit with regard to opportunity. Right. So if I win X, that means someone else lost X. And that's not how capitalism works. Like, I'm an unapologetic capitalist. It is the most amazing system that's ever been created to transform like immense numbers of humans, taking them outside of the state of abject poverty into sustainability. But the reality is financial resources are infinitely abundant because all money follows value creation. Which means if you go out into the world and create value for someone, money follows. It's sort of like I give the analogy of the gym, right? If you go to the gym and you exercise, like you do the exercise, you're lifting the weights and you gain some muscle, that doesn't take muscle from me, right? You did the work. You created a value proposition, right? You did something. If you go out into the world and create value for others, money is the byproduct. So if you want to go earn six figures, solve a six-figure problem. If you want to earn seven figures, solve a seven-figure problem. I know that's not easy, but it is simple. If you learn some of these simple precepts and then start going and saying, okay, well, how do I learn how to do it, right? Because everything I'm talking about is the what. That's an important component, but even more important to that is the how, right? What steps do I need to take? But here's the beautiful thing about life. Anything that is possible can be reverse engineered. What I mean by that is like as an example, if you ask me, Edward, how do I get to Pluto? I have literally no idea. Like, I don't know if that's possible. I don't know anyone who's ever been there. So I can't reverse engineer that process. But if you ask me, Edward, how do I get to 30,000 feet? Well, that's possible. So we can reverse engineer steps. What do you have to do? Go to the airport, buy a ticket, go through security, get to the gate, get on the plane, and stay on the plane when it takes off, right? Six steps get you to 30,000 feet because most planes will fly at that level, right? So you can reverse engineer steps, but it's not enough to just learn how to do it. You actually have to do it, right? Because information does not translate into action, and action is the only thing that leads to outcome. So notice what I said, go to the airport. It's an action statement. Buy a ticket. It's an action statement. So many of us get so lost in our analysis stage of life, where we get into analysis paralysis. We'll sit on podcasts or live sessions or read through books and consume information, which is, don't get me wrong, fundamentally awesome, but it's not enough. You actually have to do something with the knowledge you've learned, find out how to implement, and then actually implement. Find the right mentors that can help shortcut your journey. Listen to podcasts, amazing concepts and strategies that get shared in sessions like these, but then take action on it. And that's where most people fall short, because it's scary. Because you've not been brought up at a very young age to understand that it's okay to implement imperfectly, right? Again, going back to the education system that we have in the United States, at least, again, I can't comment outside the US, but in the United States, they push towards perfection. What do I mean by that? Well, you have to get an A. If you don't get an A, you've done less than stellar. Where in reality, most really successful businesses are not run by A students. Right. They're run by individuals who recognize that the system, the infrastructure that the school teaches you, is just wrong. Because think about it. Like, if you're in an exam in school and you look over at Billy or Sally's paper, you get in trouble. But in real life, if you and I, Marshall, wanted to actually do something of substance, we can collaborate to get to a good outcome. Like, that's not really taught well in school. You're taught to memorize, not to problem solve. I don't know. You're taught most things in business don't have an A, B, C, D choice, right? Yeah. Right. You have to figure it out as you go. And yeah, these are some of the things I get passionate about, because I see that there's so much opportunity out there for so many people to change their lives for the better, and we're held back simply because of ignorance.
We've had millions of people come through our seminars, and so mm-hmm. I've gotten an opportunity to observe many, many, many different points of view. And overwhelmingly, I believe people are intentionally, through our public school system, through certainly collegiate education, they're intentionally misled and miseducated to enslave them and make them good employees, make them good followers, make them good slaves is what it is. My experience is the hardest thing to do is to get people to realize that what they've seen isn't real. It's just flat out not real. And that's when people get how things work and what really happens with the flow or the velocity of money, it's like this light bulb goes off and they say, holy cow. So before tax and after tax matters. How I structure things. You know, I live in Las Vegas. That is where our residence is. We are there 6 months and a week out of the year. And then we have a home on the beach in San Diego. You live in Florida. I'm sure it was selected by you for many, many reasons. We would live in Florida. I don't like bugs and I don't like hurricanes. And I really don't like high humidity. Vegas is the other end of that spectrum. No bugs, because nothing can live there. And you know, no humidity, because the heat's 122 in the summertime. And I wouldn't want to live there either. But structuring it so that my main residence is in Vegas, my businesses are all out of Nevada, allows me to have a free home in Nevada and a vacation home on the beach. And with the money saved, fly back and forth on a private jet. No difference in the amount of effort that I expend, a slight lifestyle shift and a slight change in how we put the ducks in their order. You know, you take a look at somebody like a Bezos or an Amazon or an Apple, you know, Tim Cook, and you see them being reported not paying any taxes on billions of dollars worth of income. And I think the general public says, well, there's got to be something criminal there. Yeah. And as you know, nothing criminal going on, just the fact that they're smart enough to put their ducks in a proper order. What are some things that my audience could do almost immediately? Three things, let's call it three things, to put their ducks in a proper order right now.
Very first thing is to get a hold of your current financial situation, right? Understand where your dollars are today, meaning how much are you bringing in? How much are you sending out? I'm talking that this applies both to your business life, if you're a business owner, and your personal life. So really getting a good understanding of where the dollars come in and how they go out. And then the second thing would be to reshape, if you will, the lens through which you see the world. Understand that if you are desirous of an outcome like financial freedom, which again, when you sit down and have a real candid conversation with most people, everyone wants that, right? Not everyone's willing to do what it takes to get there, though, right? Not everyone's willing to go to the gym if they want to get physically fit, right? They'll say it, but they don't do the stuff that's required. So I'm not talking to everyone right now. I'm only talking to the people who are actually willing to do what it takes to get to the outcome they want. If you want an outcome, I'm going to say this. Figure out how to dive deep into the concepts of financial literacy. Real principles, like principles that truly change your life for the better. And then start implementing it. Figure out what podcasts you can start listening to. Make a list of them. Start to ask questions of people. Like, for instance, send a message to Marshall and say, Marshall, which podcast besides yours should I be listening to that you think can raise the standards of my perspective on X, Y, and Z topic, right? Ask the questions, because here's the thing. You won't get any answers if you don't ask the questions, right? Don't be afraid to reach out. Individuals like Marshall are here to create an opportunity for you to access information that you don't have ready availability to in your own circle, your own within your own reach. So leverage those resources as fully as you possibly can. Then actually make sure that you stop doing stupid things with your money, right? Stop doing things like spending your dollars on non-assets, right? So here's the analogy I give, or at least the way I try to help people understand and frame the topic of money is that if you are trading your time for a dollar, that is the most valuable dollar you have. Why? Because your time is worth way more than any dollar, and I can prove it. So Marshall, I have my checkbook in the next room. I'm willing to go in there right now and I'll write you a check for $10 million and I guarantee it will clear. How would that make you feel?
Awesome, of course.
Right. So the only caveat, Marshall, is you can't wake up tomorrow or ever again. Do you still want that check?
Of course not.
Of course not. Why? Because simply waking up tomorrow is worth infinitely more than a $10 million check. I can add 2, 3, 5 zeros to it. Doesn't matter. Your time is infinitely more valuable. So if you go and trade your time for a dollar, that dollar is the most valuable dollar you have. So if you're going to use that, you always want to get what I call leverage. Leverage is just a force multiplier, meaning if I'm going to trade my dollar for something else, I want more dollars in return. I don't want something that takes more dollars from me. So that's the clear difference between an asset and a liability. So if I'm going to use my dollar, I'm either putting it immediately to work to bring more dollars back home, or I am storing it for the purpose of doing that down the road with a very specific date in mind, with a very specific asset acquisition in mind. It's not just like hopes and dreams. Like, you really have to do your research. You have to be willing to do the work to get the outcome you desire. And I recognize that that is not easy, but it is simple, right? You just have to do it and find the people. If you don't know how to do it, find the people that can give you the instruction manual to get there. And that's the beautiful thing about mentorship, right? Mentorship is an opportunity for you to shortcut your journey so that you can get similar outcomes without similar scars, right? Because that mentor has already been through it. They've already achieved something. They have already gotten to a destination you want to achieve, you want to reach. You simply reverse engineer the steps to get there through their leadership. And that mentorship doesn't have to be necessarily in person. It could be done vicariously. There are brilliant human beings that have written books. You can go to a bookstore and read at the bookstore if you can't afford to buy the book right now, right? You can go on Google and get access to an infinite amount of resources, it seems like, right? You could find the podcast like Marshall's here and just consume as much as you possibly can. But I know the vast majority of people who are listening to this are just not going to do it. They won't. I recognize that. So that's why I'm not talking to most people. I'm just talking about the very few who are actually willing to say, okay, I've listened to this show. I've heard this crazy guy on the internet talk about X, Y, and Z with regard to financial literacy. I'm actually going to do something. I'm actually going to make today the moment that I can look back to 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and saying that this moment was the moment that changed my life. Because I started to look at things differently. I started to recognize that if I am trading my time for a dollar, I'm never going to use that dollar to go out and buy a television to hang on the wall, right? Unless I'm hanging on the wall inside of a rental property that I just acquired, and that television is going to bring me additional dollars back, right? I'm going to get a return on that investment. If I'm going out and I'm spending money on shoes that quite frankly are just going to wear down over time, and like that's just so ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. I recognize that a lot of people want liabilities. They want them, right? I'm okay with that. You can definitely want it. I'm just saying that if you go out and get it with a dollar that you traded your time for, I think that's stupid. Instead, go out and get the assets that can generate the cash flow to buy the liabilities for you. Because at least that asset is no longer something you trade your time for in order to generate cash flow. The asset's the thing that's generating the cash flow for you. And then you can use that cash flow to acquire the sneakers and the televisions and the automobiles and the vacations and such. Like, you can do those things by simply leveraging your perspective regarding this simple concept of the difference between assets and liabilities.
Most people won't do it. That's true. Yeah. And no matter how much we pound into it, and we have, frankly, in my opinion, and maybe it's vain on my part, we have an exceptionally smart audience, partly because I don't put up with BS. We like to call BS when we see it. I think that the challenge is right now that people are living in more fear than they have ever lived in their entire life. And I think that that's the concern that people have right now, is what's going to happen with the economy. Before my son Sterling, I was talking about Sterling in a conversation with him this morning. Before my son was born, I was afraid to have kids at all, let alone one kid, let alone three kids. I was afraid to have kids. I have seen UFOs on too many occasions. I have seen clear-cut, definite proof that we are not alone in the universe. And even if I hadn't, my own logical mind says, how vain would I have to be to think that we were the only intelligent life in this universe? And how really stupid would I have to be to think we were the most intelligent life? And God forbid that for the universe, because the universe is doomed. But my point in all of this is I decided to have kids because I was concerned about Terminator. I was concerned that AI, and we should be concerned that AI may take over the planet. But I thought, what if my son is John Connor? What if my daughter is Joanna Connor? What if my children are the ones that can actually save the planet from things going on? And I realized that I've got to hold on to that truth rather than a truth that caused me to never have babies and never experience this remarkable experience I have as a father. So I think it's the same thing with money to an even greater degree for people, is they're so terrified that they're going to make a financial misstep. They make no step, which is a misstep. And I always coach people and I say, look, yes, time is your most valuable asset. It's also the great equalizer. The amount of seconds you have in a day and I have in the day are the same. So the only distinction is, how did we use those seconds? What did we do that was distinct? Did we make sure that we planned ahead? You know, if I have someone in my life, a good friend of mine, and we're the same age and he's busy living and partying and having fun. Well, I like partying and having fun, except I realize if I don't take care of this now, later on in my life, when I don't have anything, it's not going to be a party. It's going to be really hard time. And so, you know, for me, I'd rather make sure that my life and my kids' life and my kids' life are easy, because I did the work. I broke the chain and I came out. So how do you help people make that massive financial breakthrough that says, don't be attached to being broke and don't be attached to being rich. Be attached to thinking. Be attached to going through that process?
Yeah, I think the breakthrough comes from just really understanding how things work in life, right? Like the great equalizer is not just time. It's the understanding that there's this tool out in the world called leverage, and it is amazing. Right. And there are four qualities of the of leverage that exist in business. Naval Ravikant is the one who coined some of these concepts that he called them the four C's. I have taken that concept. I've adapted it a bit based on what I teach the business owners that I counsel. But they essentially boil down to this. The first one is collaboration. Right. If you can get with another human or set of humans to collaborate on something, the force multiplier that's possible because of that is amazing. But this is what most, and again, I'm going to talk about this in the context of business owners because that's who I typically communicate with. What most business owners will do is they'll try to figure out how can I collaborate in the least expense possible. Well, that's not really a force multiplier, right? Because collaboration is what you want to have happen is you want really subject matter experts to be part of your team so that you can use and leverage those high class skill sets to create exceptional value, right? Because the reality of the world is if you look at those businesses and those business owners that have achieved what most would consider amazing milestones of success, well, they didn't do that individually and they didn't do that with a virtual assistant somewhere in a third world country. Like they didn't do that. They found the top people in their particular zone of genius and then collaborated with them to get to an outcome that was amazing. Now, don't get me wrong, it was very hard for many of them in the beginning, but as soon as they had the opportunity to take advantage of that concept of leverage, they did, and they got amazing results from that. The second concept of leverage is what is called code, right? The technology that exists. You use humans first and foremost to create systems, processes, and procedures that work, right? You use them to test it to make sure it actually works, and then you further leverage their capability through code, through technology, to enhance those systems and processes and procedures that have been perfected through the human collaboration. And then the third form of leverage is community, right? The ability to take your messaging, share it with others, and have those others become your marketing team to share with the world what it is that you do and how you do it, right? Marshall, you're doing an amazing job with regard to that particular aspect of leverage. Why? Because you created a platform by which you now let the world know who you are and what you do and how you do it, right? That you've made known to the world that you're there to serve. And that concept is you now created and cultivated a community that goes out and shares your message as well. And then the fourth concept of leverage is capital, right? Other people's money. And that enhances all the other three forms of leverage. And if you take that, those fundamental core principles and figure out how to apply them within your own life, whether it's in a business perspective or within your personal life, they apply across the board, right? So if you're an individual, not a business owner, let's say you're a W-2 employee and you're trading your time for dollars, how can you take advantage of collaboration? Well, coworkers, pairing together with your coworkers in order to figure out a system, process, and procedure that would make your work environment all that much better. Even collaborating outside of work on your own time to figure out how potentially you can get involved in your own side hustle, your own side gig, whatever that may be. Collaboration, using other people's brain power to enhance what you personally have to take it to the next level. Then leveraging technology like code. Like you'd made a comment with regard to AI taking over the world, but until that time, why not leverage it to the fullest, right? Jump into ChatGPT and figure out pretty much any question you have, you can have ChatGPT help you learn how to get to the solution, right? There's ways to leverage technology, but you have to be willing to do the work to get there. And I know it's hard to do when you have 40 to 50 hours that you may be trading your time for each and every week. And maybe you have kids at home that are vying for your attention. You have a spouse that wants your attention. You have responsibilities around the house that you need to take care of. I totally get it. It's not always going to be your fault, but it is always your problem. You got to deal with it. It just is what it is. Own up that it sucks right now, but be willing to do the work so you can get an outcome that's different. Because if you don't, you're going to end up in the same spot you are in right now, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. Like just imagine if you just did things differently for the next year, how would your life be different versus if you just continue to do what you're doing now, right? because you're going to get the same duration outcome, meaning you're going to get to the end of the year, right? It's going to happen, God willing, right? But you get to the end of the year, you have two options. You could be either look back on the year that you just spent and said, I am so glad I did X, Y, and Z. Or you can look back and say, I wish I did X, Y, and Z. The choice is yours. It's going to happen either way. And again, I know I'm not going to be resonating with most, but those select few that are watching right now that are willing to take their life by the reins and stop letting the world dictate what the outcomes they could potentially get to, and instead say, these are the outcomes I want, and I'm going to go after them. Those are the people I'm talking to right now.
You said a couple key things. One of the most important things you said was, in the beginning, it's hard. And I think that most people don't recognize, you got to get through the suck. You got to get through the tough times to get to the easier times. I have a remarkable life, and I thank God every day for the life that I get to live right now. Woke up this morning early, went outside, had a very relaxing morning in the spa, watching the waves crash. My son came down, had his breakfast on the on the back patio while we're watching the ocean. Got a chance to hang out with my wife and my son. I live a remarkable life. It wasn't always this easy. It wasn't always this joyful. And in the beginning, I've been working full time since I was 10, while everybody else was just being a kid. Now I look back and I say, I'm really glad that I chose that on my own. I had no examples around me to demonstrate that. Yeah. I just knew, because we were so dirt poor, that money cured most things. Mm-hmm. What do you suppose, we're living in unprecedented times where people, whether you like Donald Trump or not, it doesn't matter. The fact that this guy is getting attacked at the level he's getting attacked at, with no victims and no clear evidence of any real wrongdoing, just fabricated stuff, should let everybody know, whether you hate Trump or you support Trump or something in the middle, that it could be you next. And I think that that's what has to be on any clear thinker's mind right now, is how do we operate when, all sorts of weird things are coming out. Realtors' commissions are impacted. Non-compete agreements are illegal now. And all sorts of things coming down, 7 million people coming illegally into the country. All these things we've got to deal with in today's day and age. During an election year, it's always quirky. It's always odd. All sorts of hidden agendas become evident. What do you say to people that are living in massive fear, massive concern? They're not making major investments. They're putting everything on hold till November, when in truth, what you just said, the year end is going to come. The election's going to come. Somebody's going to be elected. It's going to be honest, or it's going to most likely be corrupt. There's no way around it. It's the world we live in. What do you say to people whose fear is overcoming them to the point where they can't make any decisions right now based on this?
So I'll talk about the truth about the economy. The economy doesn't care about politics. It cares about policy, right? Policy is what dictates economic outcome. So if you look at either party, it doesn't really matter. I'm an equal opportunity hater when it comes to government. I'm not Republican or Democrat. I'm a libertarian. I hate all government. I think if government should exist, it should exist as close to the people as possible, so we can literally see what they're doing with our dollars, because the government doesn't make any money. It simply takes money and redistributes it to others. And I have big problems with how it chooses to redistribute money. Like $95 billion just was approved to go overseas again. Like,
again,
your dollars, my dollars, our collective audience's dollars, like those dollars, they're our dollars.
Right.
And we did not have a say. And how can I approve that? Well, Congress's approval rating right now is what, 12%?
Right.
So obviously we didn't approve it. But the individuals in Congress are again, I know this is an overgeneralization, because I am certain that there has to be really good human beings in Washington, D.C.
You're a Pollyanna on that idea, though.
Yeah, I think the system itself is just corrupt. Even if there are good people in the environment, there's no way for them to change the course, if you will, of the tanker ship. It's really, really hard to turn the tanker, right? Yep. It just is what it is. So if that's the case, that means you and I and our audience, we need to make sure that we are doing whatever we possibly can to achieve true financial freedom, because then it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. Now, don't get me wrong. it's not pretty to sign seven-figure checks to the IRS. I mean, that's not something that gives any of us a sense of joy. But just imagine how much freedom you have if that's something you can be doing because you're earning enough money to be able to write a check for seven figures to the IRS or eight figures, right? And if you are in an environment where you've been able to understand that the tax code is simply a recipe book that has two purposes. Most people recognize that the tax code is there to raise revenue for government operations. And even that is like a joke because that's not really how it works. But a lot of people understand it to be the same. Well, the reality is the second purpose of the tax code is more prevalent and more impactful. And the second purpose is to incentivize action or inaction on the part of the people. And the government issues three carrots in which they're interested in helping you motivate in one direction. And they're going to give you a deduction, a credit, or an exclusion, right? And that's how they motivate you to do X, Y, and Z. Now, the tax code itself is ridiculously voluminous, right? Like if you look at the tax code as a whole, meaning all the legislation and then all the supporting material that the agency, the IRS, that they issue in order to help individuals understand how to operate around that apparatus, it's more than 70,000 pages long, right? But the vast majority of it is oriented towards business ownership and real estate investment. And don't get me wrong, real estate done right is business. But if you understand that it's actually designed and centering around business, you have to ask yourself why. Well, because business ownership specifically, is the driver of the economy. Like the largest employer outside of the government, because government is the largest employer in the United States, outside of the government is small business, right? So the government incentivizes small businesses to exist because they know that that's really what drives the economy. Because the government being the employer is not an economic driver. Why? Because the government doesn't make money. Like it's small businesses that create value, and that value creation creates money. Right? That's we talked about that earlier. It's the byproduct. Money is the byproduct of value. And when you actually understand those principles and you start to then reorganize your life based on the truth instead of the lies that we've been constantly told about things, you can start to do things differently. You can start to say, okay, well, wait a minute. The tax code says if I am a business owner, I get to pay my expenses before I have to worry about taxation. Well, then I just reorient my life. How can I organize my financial life to take the things that I was using after tax dollars for and instead just pay them pre-tax? For instance, like if you're a business owner and you have children, like for instance, you have minor kids, you can pay your minor children in your business. You can pay them in 2024 up to $14,650 each to do real services for your company. Like if they render real services at the federal level, the first $14,650 is the standard deduction, which means you shift income tax from your tax rate to their tax rate, which is essentially zero. Like that's awesome. Like you can, I have two kids. So my son, Ryan, is 10. My daughter, Victoria, is 8, although she acts like she's 18 most of the time. They have been working in my companies forever, right? I've been paying them forever. And now the biggest pushback I get from people is, well, what is a three-year-old going to do in your company? How can you pay them? How can you justify? Have you ever seen the Gerber baby?
Right.
The Gerber baby gets paid, right? The Gerber baby's a baby. Why? So if it is fine for life insurance companies and child food manufacturers like to use models in their business, why can't you use it in yours? As long as an expense is qualified, which means it has to fall under Section 162A of the Internal Revenue Code. And I know that I'm geeking out. I'm a lawyer, so I geek out on some of this stuff. Section 162A of the Internal Revenue Code has two provisions. It's a two-part test for a deduction to be authorized. The deduction must be both ordinary and necessary. What does that mean, though? So ordinary within the code essentially boils down to what is normal in your industry, right? Like what does your industry do that's normal? So as an example, let's say you're a bakery, right? It would be normal for you to buy an oven, right? Because that's a normal expense for a bakery, right? Because you have to bake things, right? But remember, it's a two-part test. The expense must be both ordinary and necessary. So what does necessary mean? Well, that's where you have a little bit more room for interpretation, but essentially it boils down to being required for the pursuit of revenue generation. That doesn't mean required to actually achieve revenue, but for the pursuit of revenue generation. So in the same analogy, the same context, the same scenario, if you were a bakery and you had 11 ovens already and you wanted to buy a 12th, but there's literally no room in your bakery for a 12th oven, going out and buying that 12th oven, if you were audited, that expense would likely be disallowed, because it is not both ordinary and necessary. And that's where a lot of people just, again, these financial gurus will get online, tell you to do X, Y, and Z with your dollars in order to reduce your taxes. But then they don't talk about the reality of it. Well, the reality is it has to be both ordinary and necessary. So me going on a vacation to the Galapagos with my family and getting a deduction for doing that, well, that's just not like, what was it really necessary for you to go to the Galapagos in order to get a deduction, take your whole family with you, right? No, probably not. But there are things you could do. Like if you have your entire family on your advisory board for your holding company, for instance, well, then you can have family management meetings on a regular basis. And maybe those family management meetings are held, I don't know, like around a particular time of the year where the family gets together anyway for a big meal, right? I think it's called Thanksgiving, right? And maybe at that time, your business will then rent your home for the use of the family meeting. And then you can take advantage of something called the Augusta rule, where the business can take a rent deduction, and you, when you rent your personal residence to any third party, meaning your business potentially could be a third party if it's structured the right way, your business can get the deduction and you personally can receive that income tax-free because it's considered an exclusion to income. Like these are the principles that if you learn how to understand the tax code and how to apply it to your unique circumstance, you can end up keeping more of your own money. I give public appearance presentations all the time. I speak on stage a lot. And almost inevitably, when I finish up a presentation, I will be approached by audience members, and they'll almost always ask me the same question. Edward, how can I make more money? My response is almost always the same. Well, start off by keeping more of what you're already making. Stop sending tips to the IRS. Stop overpaying. This is not according to Edward Collins. Forbes did an entire article on this. They basically broke down. They did all the research. They did the analysis. They determined that more than 9 out of 10, to the tune of 93% of all business owners, overpay their taxes every single year. And that's regardless of whether or not they had a high-priced accountant on their side. And the reason for it is because most people rely on the accountant to reduce their taxes because they don't understand how money really works and how the system works. Most accountants aren't there to reduce your taxes. Most accountants are little more than glorified historians. They spend all their time, their effort, and their energy just trying to figure out how to best tell the IRS what already happened. It's a yesterday job. It's not a tomorrow job. If you want to reduce your taxes, you have to be proactive. What am I going to do this week, next quarter, in order to reduce my tax burden next year, right? You have to be proactive in your thought process. And it's not a knock on accountants. It's just they're not taught to be tax strategists. They're taught to be compliance experts, which is what number goes into what box on what form so the IRS doesn't get mad, right? That's their job. And that's, don't get me wrong, that you need to file your taxes. That's a requirement. You have to do that. If not, you're going to get in trouble, right? There's a big difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion, and it's about 15 years in prison. So don't do that. Don't do tax evasion. Right.
So tell us, what is your business? You said you get on stage and you speak in front of other audiences. Is the majority of your business personal consultations? Are you hired as a consultant? Do you speak at events? Do you hold live events? What do you do?
We do all of the above. I own a variety of different businesses. I spend most of my time coaching business owners on how to take their lives and their businesses to the next level. And we give detailed analysis on how to structure the business the right way, how to organize their financial life to reduce their tax burden. And then ultimately, when they're saving and holding on to more of those dollars, how to put those dollars to work to go out and acquire the right assets. Right? I have a three-pillar process. I call the first pillar the real wealth matrix, which is the ideal hierarchy of ownership pretty much over everything in your life. The second pillar I call plugging the profit leaks. Have you ever gotten to the end of the year and wondered where all the money went? That process I call leakage, right? Profit leakage. So we organize their business and financial life in such a way that they get to retain more of their own hard-earned money, sending less money to Uncle Sam every year. And then if you're doing that, where do you put those savings? Like, what do you do with those dollars? Well, that's the third pillar. We call that compound asset acquisition. So I teach business owners how to go out and acquire assets. Assets, again, under my definition, are things you control which generate cash flow for you, because cash flow is the secret ingredient to financial freedom.
Before we wrap up, the hour's gone way, way, way too fast. I could chat with you for hours longer, and I'm sure people would love listening to it. Where can people get a hold of you? How do they get some more information about what you do? And how might somebody who's interested, because we have a lot of high net worth individuals watching the show, how could somebody that's interested in helping you redirect them get more of your information?
The best way to do that would be to jump into our social media platform. The easiest one is probably going to be Instagram. That most people are in that environment. If you jump into my Instagram, you'll definitely get access to it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. You're a rock star. I appreciate you. And I would love to get your own. I would love to get your contact information to find out some more about what you're doing and how we can integrate it for our students as well. Edward Collins, thanks so much for being on the show.
It's definitely been a pleasure, Marshall. Thank you so much for having me. I wish you guys well and take some action steps. Bye for now.
Take care. What a great show. Hey, wish me well. Say your prayers. I'm going out to get these level 61 knees redirected so that by the time I'm hitting level 122, I'm still playing racquetball with my beautiful bride. I'm Marshall Silver. You are totally loved. It's an awesome day. Remember, time is the great equalizer. Make sure you're using yours well, which includes being with me every single day live for this show. I'll see you on tomorrow's show. Make it an awesome day.